All right. Well, hello, my name is Linda Ray, and I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Linda Ray.
And since this is Unity Day, before I get into talking about what Maureen asked me to, which is abstinence, I would like to just touch briefly on Tradition 1, because Tradition 1 has an awful lot to say about unity. We compulsive overeaters have lived most of our lives in isolation. Many of us preferred to be alone so we could overeat without interference. And even when we were surrounded by other people, it became progressively difficult for us to connect with them because of our obsession with food, body size, and eating grew. Some of us felt like failures when we had to seek help from anyone outside ourselves. I'm going to jump around a little bit. Many of us would not be alive today if it were not for our OA groups. Here is the only place we have found recovery from the devastating disease of compulsive overeating. And on page 111 of our 12 Steps and 12 Traditions, it talks about protecting the OA spirit of unity. Ideally, OA is a place where every member has ample opportunity to share, where we don't try to confront or fix each other in the groups, where we do not dump the most intimate details of our lives on the meetings, but save them for one-on-one discussions with our sponsors. It's every member's responsibility to protect the OA spirit of unity and mutual support. And when it comes to our turn to lead an OA meeting, Tradition 1 makes it our responsibility to lovingly remind individuals of the group's guidelines whenever the group conscience is being ignored. We keep our minds and our hearts open to our higher power's will in all matters. And after the discussion is over and the group has made a decision, this is talking about a group conscience, we don't allow any lingering feelings of conflict to divide the group. In OA, we resolve our differences of opinion by considering the welfare of the group as a whole. There's a lot more to be said, but I'm going to end with one sentence on page 115. Unity does not mean uniformity. And I love that about our program. We are not alike, are we? Unity does not mean uniformity. In OA, we learn we can disagree with other people on important issues and still be supportive friends. We listen to others with open minds. We learn to express ourselves without insisting that everyone must do things our way. And as we practice these new skills, we learn to understand ourselves and others better. So I love the theme of unity, but I am going to stick with the topic I was given, which is abstinence. And that will take me to step 11, because I won't be talking about the food today, although I would just be delighted if you want to call me or take me aside after the meeting or look down here in my little bag and see what I brought for lunch. You know, we're always interested in what other people eat in this program. But abstinence is more than what I'm eating. And so I would like to talk about what it means to me. First of all, I'll say that I came into the program in 1976. I truly am an old timer. Just had my 66th birthday. And more than half of my life has been spent in this program, and I am so delighted. I'm not a good example of someone who took the weight off and kept it off. I have relapsed. In fact, I brought my pictures. If you'd like to thumb through them quickly, you can see the good, the bad, and the ugly in there. When I married my husband 45 years ago, I was on diet pills, and he had no clue who I was. And I got scared because I started taking what was supposed to be a once-a-day pill two or three times a day, and I threw them all away. But I want you to know that my husband had no clue who I was, and he has stuck with me all these years. He's seen me at 260, and he's seen me at 112 in these rooms, and he's seen me everywhere in between. Not only the body weight, because the body weight is not all we're talking about. It doesn't matter if you are anorexic, if you are bulimic, if you're extremely obese. We all have some sort of a food addiction, and there's only one solution, and that is a spiritual solution. You know, we like to think that if we just go to meetings and work the 12 steps and call our sponsor and, you know, we get the perfect food plan, that we're going to end up cured or in recovery for the rest of our lives. And what I would have to share from my own experience is, but I'm going to stop. If that baby cries, I'm so happy. I love babies. So don't feel like you have to rush out, okay? the sound of a baby is a joyous sound, and I'm having my third grandchild soon, so I'm a happy grandma. Okay. In order for me to maintain my abstinence, and if you look at the pictures, you'll see me up and you'll see me down, I have had to find the spiritual solution. And so I'd like to share with you just a few things that have worked for me. But first, I'll tell you what didn't work. San Diego, for 3 years, gave me a very skinny body. That's where I came into OA, called my sponsor every day, weighed and measured everything that went into my mouth, made one or two meetings a week, and did everything I was told. I mean, I was so whipped by the time I got there, I just wanted someone to fix me, and I did what I was told. It got me thin, but it didn't get me well. I was afraid to have more than one fruit a day. I never had any complex carbohydrates. If my protein was 1/2 of an ounce over 4, I was in tears. I was thin, but I was a basket case, and it was still all about the food. Then we went overseas, and I remember the night before we flew out, I got up at midnight and had a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. Peanut butter was not on my food plan. Jelly was not on my food plan. Bread was not on my food plan. It was the only way I could think of to show how terrified I was to move to a place where I thought they might not have meetings. And they didn't. But within the first 2 or 3 weeks, I found a CAC unit. We were doing duty there for 3 years with the Marines. And so I crawled in the back of this truck with these guys. Some of them were throwing up out the back end. One of the guys I remember was shaking with the DTs, and the others were saying, "Don't worry, they're fine, you'll be fine." And we were on our way to an AA meeting. And so while we were overseas, two separate times, both Japan and the Philippines, I spent 3 years each time in AA because I didn't have OA. I was just scared to death they'd find out I wasn't an alcoholic. And what I realized was they didn't really care. They were there to try to recover themselves. And once one of them found out I was a chunky instead of a drunkie, I was welcome. So I would like to fast forward. Every time I would come back and have a good support group, we went back to San Diego in between our military stance overseas. And when I was at home, I would breathe this breath of fresh air, and I knew it was going to be okay because I had meetings every day and every night of the week that I could go to. But when I went overseas the last time, I realized that not only was there no, and I could start groups, and I did. You know, I put notices on the billboards and the laundromats and at the grocery stores, and I ended up picking 4 or 5 or 6 ladies up on the way so that we could have a meeting. So it's not that I went without meetings. It's just that when you're the only one who sponsors and when you're the only one who everybody comes to for answers, it was not a pretty picture. So what I had to do was I had to develop a relationship with my higher power that was stronger than my relationship with the group. And I want to say that once more. I had to develop a relationship with my higher power that was stronger than my relationship with the group. Because the group can work as God for a while. The group really can. But there comes a point in your life where you want more than just thin. More than just sanity with the food. I want sanity with my life. I'd like to be able to work the 12 steps and traditions in my home, as well as talk about them when I go to a meeting. The only way I know to do that, number one, step one, I am powerless. I knew that when I came in here. Step two, I believed in God, and I believed He could fix me. I wasn't sure He was going to, because I sort of thought it was my job to do that, but I came to believe that God cared enough about me that He wanted me to be healthy. And so that for me was step two. And from there, because we all are familiar with the steps, I'd like to jump right into the heart and the core of this issue of abstinence. And that is step 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for His will for us and the power to carry that out. I find in these pages, and I'm not going to read it, I'm going to pick up highlighted words, and I have them written down at the bottom. This says that I have an ultimate source, and that source is life-changing love. That's on the very first page of step 11. It says that there is a healing force that we can encounter directly. That's pretty serious words. It talks about this healing force being our guidance, our strength, and our serenity. It talks about having an attitude of complete trust. Now, when I came in, I trusted, but complete trust, no. I just didn't think it was possible for me to ever be in a thin body. Never had been. I weighed about what I weigh now in high school. Actually, that's not true. I weighed more, probably 10 pounds more in high school. So to have an attitude of complete trust took some real willingness for me. It took working step 3, turning my will and my life over. And it says, we may feel awkward about regular daily prayer, although step 11 encourages us to practice prayer, to continue talking to our higher power daily. And if we feel awkward, so what? We practice, you know? What other things have you ever learned to do? I felt awkward eating broccoli. Mm-hmm. I hated broccoli. Actually, I've got broccoli in my lunch today. So we practice what feels awkward. Also, we, the OA group, do not replace traditional religious practices. You don't hear that line spoken too much. It also doesn't tell us that we have to go into a traditional religious practice. But it does say that OA does not replace that. So if that's helpful for you to look outside yourself to organized religion, then by all means, if I needed a psychologist, I would go to a psychologist. If I need a doctor, I'm going to a doctor. If I want to learn more about God, why not try some form of organized religion? Or not. You know, it's open to you. But the important question here that I really loved, in addition to reading memorized prayers, we can also express ourselves to God in our own words, like we might talk to our best friend. The important thing is honesty with ourselves and honesty with our higher power if we are going to receive this source of healing and strength. We need to bring into our prayers all of the things that concern us. I've heard people in this program say, oh, I don't pray for anything general. I just pray, you know, God, I want to know your will and give me the power to carry that out. And that sounds so good. But come on, when I am in the pits, I am going to get up in the morning, I am going to go to my higher power, and I am going to say, I am in the pits. I'm devastated today, or I'm depressed today, or I'm demoralized, or I don't even want to get dressed today. And I'm going to keep talking about it, maybe write about it, and then I'm going to ask for help to change my mind, because frankly, I can't do that on my own. Not very well, and not repetitively. So the other thing I really like here is, what about if we're angry with God? And this is all in step 11. All of us who seek to develop a relationship with our higher power through prayer experience times when we feel angry with God. Maybe we want to give up prayer entirely. But as we seek to recover with God's help, neither of those options will work for us any longer. So we go ahead and express our anger, but we keep on talking to God. I mean, is there anybody in this room that has never in your life been angry at God? I don't think so. I mean, he's too big and we're too small and we need him. So this is what I love. Many of us have found that the practice of writing down our angry feelings or other concerns in letters to God is a great help. Sometimes we mailed them. Sometimes we put them in our God can. Sometimes we made a burnt offering of them. Sometimes we dropped them in the river. You know, I love this chapter. And I guess there's one last piece I wanted to share here. Our higher power is the only source of help that is always available to us, strong enough to lift us up and set our feet on the path of life. Practiced regularly, this opens our lives to the comfort we sought in food but could never find. So here's the deal. I seek comfort in food still today. I don't care if it's 2 more Brussels sprouts than I'm allowed on my plate. Or, you know, that papaya looks awfully small. I am not cutting that sucker in half. You know, I mean, I still fight with that today. What I don't fight with is that I have to do it alone. I don't fight that I have to do it by myself. I have come to know that there's only one source for my spiritual solution, and I can start with the group. Certainly a sponsor is helpful. Meetings for me are mandatory. Right now I'm making 4 meetings a week. I'm also making a couple of other 12-step meetings. One of them is actually new for me, and I don't know if it's a fit yet, but I'm trying it because someone suggested I should. She suggested that it might help my OA recovery, so I'm willing to try. The one thing I want to tell you is this is the miracle for me. The miracle really has happened. Somewhere along the line, I actually sat down with my higher power and said, "What do you want?" Not "What do I want?" Not "Give me this, give me that." Not "Help me reach a certain weight." But "What do you want? And can you show me how to live my life in a way that will give me peace and sanity?" And what happened is I became willing to eat differently. Yes, I eat more fruits and vegetables. There's a whole category. There are aisles down the grocery store I never even walk down anymore. And that was never true when I was out there eating. Those were the first aisles I went to. So yes, my food is different. But what is really different is that I'm asking help to eat what a normal body should eat. Even though I'm not in a normal body today, I am no longer at 260. I'm about 180. That's about where I am right now. So the beauty of it is when I get up in the morning and I say, "What is your will for me today? Where do I go? Which meetings do I go to? Is there someone you want me to call?" Now that's a hard one for me. I don't like using the phone. But is there someone that you would like for me to call? Is there something that I need to do around the house that's just escaping my mind? Is there a friend who might need my help today? Those kinds of questions, when I can focus and receive those kinds of answers, it frees me from the obsession with food. I don't have any other way to describe it other than a spiritual awakening that has nothing to do with religion. It has everything to do with that personal contact that Step 11 talked about, that we can have a personal God and be in direct contact. It has everything to do with that. There was another sentence in here that said, when we start hearing from God, how do we know it's God? You know, we don't. We don't know what it is. We're not sure. And we can't just really say, "Is that you?" or "Is that you?" So it's wise to check things out with our sponsor. It's wise to talk to other people about what we're hearing if we're planning on making some decisions. But you know what I think is really wise is to trust that there is a higher power out there that loves you enough to speak to you directly. And if you will begin to listen, and if you will begin, I mean, if he tells you to jump off a bridge, I'd seriously call someone. But if you are listening and you are hearing, what harm can there possibly be in trying to follow what you are hearing for your life? So I don't have any idea what time I started. Is my time about up?
Well, you've got 5 more minutes.
Okay, 5 more minutes. What I'd like to wind up with is this. I love my meetings today. I mean, I just, when I have to miss a meeting, there's a real reason for me to miss my meetings. I don't miss because I need them. It's good for me to share. My sponsors always told me, share at every meeting that you can. Make it short. Keep it within 3 minutes, but share. And then she said, but be free to listen. Be free to listen what everyone in the room has to say. Because I get my answers from those shares, way more than a speaker, by the way. From people that are just sharing what's on their heart. Some women will pour out what's going on in their lives. Some women will just share with a lot of joy that they're having success. Others, the ones who wait and share towards the end, those are the ones I'm really listening to. Because they didn't have a burning desire to rush in there and share. They have something that needs to come out. And I love hearing those personal shares. So meetings are really important to me. But I have to tell you that the best part of this program is in, yes, working the steps with a sponsor, but also going to my higher power and asking him, what is it that you have for me that I'm not seeing yet? What is it that I'm not looking at that you want me to look at? And I'm talking things like in my own home with my husband of 45 years. I joked in a meeting one time and said, there's no woman out there that's been married as long as I have that doesn't know what it's like to just want to thrash your husband. But I also know what it's like for him to want to thrash me. And these meetings and these steps teach me that it's not okay to not work these steps and traditions in my own home. But that's where I should be trying to work them first. It's the hardest place to work them. It's awfully good to come to a meeting and talk a good talk. It's awfully hard to go home and walk that same walk in my own home. It means courtesy. It means respect. It means not valuing my opinion above his or my children's. It means living life in a different way. I don't get to be the boss anymore. And I'll end with one of my favorite quotes that someone said to me. He was this man who came to a meeting in this thin body, never missed this Kensington meeting in San Diego, carried his briefcase, and one of the things that I heard him say was, I would put back on my 200 pounds if I would be of more value to God at that weight than I am at this weight. And I thought, whoa, at the time I thought the man was crazy and needed a better recovery. But now I realize what he was saying was, I need to be available no matter what I weigh. I need to be doing it God's way, not my way. And certainly not my way or hit the highway, which can frequently come out in our homes. So I love God, yes. I love God, but God loves me more. And God loves you whether you know him or not. That's why I love our literature that says God as you understand. Now we don't even say as you understand him. We say God as you understand God. Because that has to be your choice. You have to find that yourself. No one can give it to you. No one can find it for you. But it is not an it. It is a person and a personal relationship. So thank you very much for letting me share with you.
Thanks. We're open now if anybody has, we have about 20 minutes to share before lead talks, and anybody has any comments about something Linda Ray brought up or something that's on your mind.
So I'm Chris, compulsive overeater and sugar addict.
Hi, Chris.
This is a little more intimidating. So with the microphone, I really appreciate that message, and it's one that I've been hearing a lot, and I think probably more that, you know, this is the message that's always there, but my ears are opening up a little bit, and I'm becoming more willing. And I've received a lot of grace and a lot of blessings and miracles just being in this program. And currently I'm feeling really grateful for, you know, because I also had lost more weight following a specific food plan, and then have gained some weight back, and not back to the weight that I was in the beginning, and I've been able to stay away from the certain foods that make me absolutely insane. I've been feeling really frustrated with not being able to stick with that specific food plan, and I had some kind of health issues that got interfered as well, and feeling frustrated by that. And at the moment, I'm feeling like, well, no, it's just kind of bringing me back to really looking at the steps in a different way and deepening into those, and realizing that I hadn't taken been serious about step three or really understood step three. And recently, I've been playing with that concept. You know, what if I actually did turn my will and my life over to the care of whatever God is? And I have a lot of struggle with that idea, God. Heard someone in a meeting this morning call it good orderly direction, and I can work with that. You know, I think there is a force for love in the world, and I think there is a force for healing, and I think there is, you know, something we can tap into, and I don't know why I get so, well, my sponsor said to me today, or reminded me of a quote that's in the OA 12 and 12, that I have to work a very rigorous program so that my destructive self does not take over my healthy self. And that's what it feels like is going on for me, is what my destructive self is going, what you want to do, what? And but I spent this week without having to define, you know, just kind of acting as if, not having to define what G-O-D is, but I spent this week, I think it was last week or some recent week, where I got up in the morning and I did the 11th step, and then throughout the day, whenever I felt, you know, restless, irritable, or discontent, you know, I'm starting to notice, oh, this is resentment, oh, this is fear. And I would notice that, and I would literally, you know, or inside my head, ask whatever G-O-D is, you know, the higher part of myself, the healing energy, the loving force, you know, I'd say, well, what should I do in this situation? And just like I was talking to a friend, and it felt so much lighter that week. I felt lighter. The world felt lighter. And my food was a whole lot better because I would also ask God, you know, what should I eat? And then I had, you know, if I was being serious about step three, I had to follow through on that. I had, you know, if God said eat this instead of that, then I had to eat this, even though I wanted to eat that. And I don't know, it just feels bizarre to me that it worked so well, and that it felt so positive and light and healthy. And I'm noticing that destructive self rearing up and wanting to talk me out of it. And I want to recognize that I just need to work a more rigorous program in response. So thanks.
Thanks, Chris.
Thanks, Chris.
Who'd like to share?
I'm Amy, a food addict, bulimic, and abstinence is the most important thing in my life today.
Hi,
everybody. When I went to Gracie's OA, everybody said that after they introduced themselves, and I just loved that. And I thought, you know, I'm going to start taking the things that I love from all my years in recovery and just making my own little program. Like, I loved what you read about unification, not, and now I can't remember what that word was,
uniformity.
Because, you know, I think that's what's so brilliant about food recovery is, you know, like in AA, drug addiction, all kinds of addictions, you can put that down. But with food addiction, it's a daily practice. It's a daily confrontation into your powerlessness. And so, you know, no two people have ever eaten the exact same thing. I mean, even normal people, they don't eat the same things. So learning, well, what is really going to work for me, you know? And then when that, whatever that was, stops working, oh, well, now what is going to work for me? And, you know, just this continual process. And so I loved your share so much. I, too, have come from long time, you know, 1979 was my bottom. And I've had, you know, multiple, my pictures that I pass around, I call it my yo-yo relationship with sugar, really. And I have pictures of me on sugar and pictures of me off sugar, because that is really my unique flavor of being an addict is, you know, I'm like a heroin addict when I'm on it, and I'm like a normal person when I'm off it. And I am a Dr. Jekyll, Miss Hyde, you know. And so You know, I recently went to another recovery food program, and I weighed and measured, and that, you know, it's very, I won't say strict, but they're very, it's kind of like how OA, and, you know, very, and I seem to go through periods throughout my recovery where I need some real structure, especially when my life takes a turn for non-structure, like I left my job, so... you know, what do I do when I need that comfort? I turn to something sweet. You know, it's just a classic childhood behavior. You know, I want something sweet. And how can I get that sweetness and comfort in my life if I don't know how to get that? So I go for the next best thing. So anyway, so 3 years ago, I got into this recovery, and I just, you know, did it full blast, you know, made the commitment, and it was fantastic. You know, I think it really offered me some incredible practice of really living the tools, you know, and for me, the food plan, I had never been willing to use a digital scale, and it was horrible at first, because I had no idea how rebellious I was. Like, what do you mean 4.0 and not 4.1 or 3.75? Or, you know, like, I'm like, oh, this is just going to turn me into a numbers, you know, and I'm going to get all obsessed about that, like you were saying about your early, early years. And the truth was, you know, the more I just surrendered and said, well, screw it, it doesn't matter. My best thinking has got me, you know, binging and throwing up again, so whatever. And the minute I kind of gave up that and just surrendered to whatever somebody was telling me to do, it became this incredible freedom, like this doorway. Like this number became the key to, oh, this is how I am sober. This is how I define living sober. If I'm not following whatever plan that is, you know, and it's different for everybody, but if I'm not following that, then that tells me, oh, I'm not doing that. And anyway, so it was incredibly freeing, and just the opposite of what originally I would thought, like, oh, that's so rigid, and that's so, you know, I don't want my focus on food to be about a number, but it was actually the opposite. It completely freed me up to live my life and see what I was eating over. So it was no longer about what I was eating, it was what I was eating over. And so, anyway, I just recently went through another big change where a big project that I've been working on finished. And once again, I'm like in this unstructured period, and my switch is broken. So I, you know, thought, well, maybe I could handle a little bit of sugar or, you know, something. And, you know, it was profound how progressive this is. I was doing things, you know, I was like digging movie popcorn out of the trash at the movie theater. You know, I mean, I was doing seriously crazy shit-ass stuff, you know? I mean, it was awful. And like, in a very short time, you know, I was like, poo-pawed that phrase, your disease is doing push-ups in the parking lot, you know? And I didn't, you know, oh, yeah, 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 you know? And it was devastating, really, you know, to have all this recovery and to see how quickly, you know, and so I'm recording it, I'm taking pictures, I'm like, I'm documenting this because this, I never want to forget this, you know. And so anyway, I'll try to wrap it up, but I went back to the very basics of writing the 30 questions from how on the first three steps and really, really surrendering and realizing just everything you talked about this is a spiritual solution. And for me, you know, it starts with my abstinence. It starts with surrendering and saying, okay, I'm willing to do whatever you tell me, and then we'll see what happens, and that's how I get close to God. So, sorry I went a little long, but thank you for listening. Who wants to go next?
Thanks, Amy.
I'll stand and walk it to you.
I'm Maureen. That's it.
Over here. Hi, everybody. I shared this in this morning's meeting, but I feel so good about it, I hope you don't mind if I repeat it here. Something really miraculous happened to me this week, and it really was because of something my husband said to me, which really shocks me. I've been having this on again, off again fight with my
young, our middle sister, who lives back in Connecticut, and we have traded all kinds of horrible things about each other. I called her delusional, and she said to me, "Well, we never think about you at all. You're not a part of our lives." Anyway, that kind of shit, I'll say. But she's had this resentment for over two years, actually, since our mother died. And Jeff said to me, "Well, why don't you just write to her like a regular letter?" And I thought, oh, not a bad idea. So I did. And the response was, Thursday was my birthday, and she left an afternoon message on my phone saying, "Oh, thank you, Mimi, for your letter and for everything. And yes, I want to be back together again and friends." And I mean, it was just, it was the best birthday present I ever could have had. It was wonderful. I also went myself to Arvada and bought a sugar-free birthday cake, which I knew I wasn't going to get otherwise. And I haven't binged on it. It's nice, but there's this bakery that does those things, and I'm glad I have it, because it made me feel good to have it. Anyway, this program is just miraculous, and as I see changes happening in my life, and also in those around me as well. And I really felt when I wrote that letter to Kathy, I was following the program principles and taking the higher road rather than, you know, shooting off an insult of some kind and just wanted to get her back. And it changed everything. It opened everything up. And so I'm really grateful to be here today. Thank you all for being here, too. That's all I have.
Got it. Hi, I'm Stephen, compulsive eater.
Hi, Stephen.
And while I'm talking, think about how you want to be next. The thing about the popcorn got me thinking about myself and my own behaviors. And it's just so close at hand, you know. I mean, the stuff, you can say, "Oh, this is the stuff I used to do."
Can you speak up a little bit, please?
I thought it was. Yeah. It's being recorded, so you can catch it later on. I have allergy problems, and that has a lot to do with it. Sorry. So, yeah, the popcorn thing, I was thinking about myself. I was vacuuming the floor today, and, you know, I'm using the hose with the wand, you know, the little slit in it and everything. I picked up a jelly bean off the floor, you know, and, you know, took it off of there just like you would any other object. And I can't say I didn't look at it lustfully, you know. It was red, okay? And you know what Freud said about that. But one reason I didn't need to consume it is that I tried that before. In fact, I picked up a whole bunch of them, okay? I don't remember what it was. It doesn't matter. And I remember I went to the sink, and I was going to rinse them off. I did. Really good, you know. And the theory is that the water will dissolve the outside edge and anything, with any contaminants that are in it, you know. And I remember I tried one of them. It tasted half like jelly bean and half like floor. I did stop, but I was already in recovery at that time, and I guess I needed a little bit more. For me, the biggest part of abstinence, the most important part for me is, you know, again, like a lot of people are saying, not just abstinence from food behaviors directly, but abstinence from the insanity that governed most of the moments of my life, you know, when the dial would point to batshit, which is my favorite level. That's where the jelly beans cut in, right on the edge of that. And that would just, that would be the majority of the time I spent in a day. And now I can say that, you know, that's the minority of the time when that happens. And I like life a lot better that way. Okay, so who's next?
Thanks, Steve. Okay. So we have time for one more share.
I'll be quick.
Okay, Rebecca, go for it.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Rebecca. I'm a compulsive eater, food addict, and bulimic.
Hi, Rebecca.
Hi. I've started saying recently that I'm a food addict and bulimic, just to kind of hear it, you know, so that I'm not fooling myself. You know, it's not just compulsive eating, it's an addiction. It really is an addiction. I was just sitting here, you know, thinking, you know, and thank you for your share. That was really good to hear. And I guess I don't really have a lot to say except I just want to try and stop controlling my life. I just want, you know, I mean, I am not doing well, you know, like my body has broken out in stress hives for the last month, and it's getting worse. And like, I went to the doctor the other day and they prescribed, you know, steroids for 5 days, and I was like, there's no way in hell that I'm taking steroids. But, you know, the doctor was like, you did come here for relief. And I was like, so I like grilled her on all the side effects and all this shit, and I just, you know, thought to myself, okay, well, I've had to take antidepressants in the past, and I was really against that. And then the doctor said, okay, well, you don't have to take antidepressants, you know, that's fine, you know, just know that the road to recovery will just be longer and harder. And it's true. And I thought, well, give me the damn antidepressants. And I mean, I have to say that was one of the best decisions that I made, because I just saw night and day, you know, what depression really is, and I was really not myself. And anyway, so I'm taking these stupid steroids, and the first day it was like, you know, both miraculous and terrible, but you know, because I felt like bees had stung my entire face. But then, you know, the next day I woke up and it was gone. But then, you know, the next day after that I woke up and I had the hives again, and I was just like, this is really, and I'm just like, I don't know what to do, you know. I, you know, like my best thinking or whatever, you know, we say in program, I am here, you know, I'm stressed out. I just want to go home, and I just want to like not deal with this, this crap. But the only way to like go of it is, I mean, I don't know what to do. So I guess the only thing I can do is just listen to my higher power. That's all I can do. Because I feel like I'm in a frenzy when I try and do anything on my own. So it's really encouraging to be here. I'm really glad to be here. I really am trying to get out of myself, because, you know, in my head, you know, what can I do for recovery? Like, I'm just like trying to, you know, it's like, if I'm not crazy with the food, I'm crazy after recovery. And it's like, oh my God, just let go. Just let go. And so I just really want to let go. So I'll just be here. Thanks for listening.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.